Welcome back to the Content That Grows podcast. I'm your host, Nate Turner. Today, I'm being joined by Kevin McLaughlin. Kevin is a PR and marketing strategist with over 25 years working with B2B and B2C companies of all sizes. He currently heads up PR and communications for Bluevine, a fintech company offering digital banking platform for small businesses. Prior to joining Bluevine, Kevin was managing director at ICR, a top five IR and PR agency working with late stage companies. Kevin also co-founded and ran a boutique PR and integrated marketing agency for over 15 years with B2B and B2C clients, including Oracle, LendingTree, Adobe, and more. Kevin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so today we're talking about creating and distributing data reports, and there's a lot of great stuff within that. Multiple names for it too. We recently, started providing and doing research reports for clients, kind of same concept. And I love your background and just kind of the in-house and agency experience and kind of a PR and comms angle to all of it. So I think there's a lot of great stuff we can dig into today, just as it relates to that. So to start, I would love to just have you talk about, you recently did a data report at Bluevine. So maybe just talk about creating that and kind of the initial experience, then we'll dig into it from there.
Yeah, that's right. At Bluevine, we were just evolving the PR communications program. When I came in last year, about mid-year, I inherited the program that was already in place. And one of the things that we identified is that we were speaking a lot more to the fintech industry and more broadly, say, the investor industry and the market in general. Yeah. And through comms, not speaking quite as much directly to our customers. And when we thought about ways that we could kind of, stimulate conversations and bring, interesting points to our customers, allow us to talk about value, was to create a report, a database report that spoke a little bit more to them, the things that they were thinking about, the decisions that they may have been contemplating or struggling with. And yep. Because, Bluevine is, arguably the number one challenger banking platform for small businesses, the notion was if we can create a report that would help businesses be successful. So not just how they use banking, that's very close to our wares, so to speak, but mm-hmm. more about, well, what is the overall sentiment? Where are they spending? Where are they saving? What are they thinking about? They're thinking about borrowing money. How are they going to put that to work? So all those things kind of coming together to say, well, what we try to do as a company is to foster small business success. So let's look at this less about moving banks or, selecting a particular credit card.
Yeah.
And let's think more about the underlying, elements of success for our customer base and provide value to them, let them learn from their peers. And out of that came the idea of a business owner success survey, which also boiled down as an acronym to the BOSS.
It's,
fun and appropriate for small businesses, nationwide. Yeah. So we launched the survey and the report, and it came at a good time. So we launched it in fourth quarter so that we would have something at the beginning of the year. And this is the first one of this type for Bluevine. So there's a lot of, learnings. We got to get a lot of buy-in across different business units, because while it was funded out of kind of research and the marketing department, we knew that there would be use for the report throughout, not just the marketing stack, but throughout the business. So that was a key factor in getting, support and buy-in from across the company. And then also understanding the value of the report just didn't lie in one channel, but it was multi-channel through all the whole marketing stack and then, into the company.
Yeah. Awesome. So, one question I have is, like, I think, it could be easy to, as a company, decide, let's do a data report. And someone kind of jumps in, starts creating it, and it could kind of like pretty easily gravitate into like just a fun thing to do or like just this side project perhaps, but not necessarily tie into like the core business objectives. And so I'm curious how, if there was anything you wanted to share from like the beginning stages of planning, were there ways you kind of knew we need to go this route or do it this way to know that by the time we're done with it, the end product will align with the objectives we have?
Yeah, interesting question. And I had the same kind of thought when I first started, because I'm new to the company. I've done this as you kind of provided in my bio that I've done this for a lot of companies, you know, for 25 mm-hmm. years, a lot from the agency side. So dealing with, you know, dozens of companies each year, and a lot of times, you know, database storytelling comes up as a need, and actually, you know, a great tool, especially from a outbound communication standpoint, and certainly inbound as well. Yeah. And so thinking about, you know, here's a 10-year-old company. It's been through a lot of iterations. There's been tremendous growth. It's now standing, you know, among the top of its market. How do you introduce something new and get buy-in? So I right away went to the idea of creating an abstract that outlines not just the intention of the report and why it's different than anything that we've done so far, mm-hmm. but what the value is going to be in its primary purpose being communications, but also, as I mentioned, all the other touch points and all the other uses across the value chain.
Yeah.
And how it can be used, and not just in this one instance, right? Because one of the strongest things a data report can have is longevity, so that you can start to track trending with the same data points or the same questions, if it's a survey, you know, quarter over quarter, half year, year over year. A, it allows you to be more in control of that narrative, not relying on
yeah.
you know, third-party data that you're comparing to, and the frequency that comes out, how the questions are phrased or the data is positioned, and also gives you you know, more agency over when and how it's brought, you know, to market.
Yep.
So creating a one-pager that kind of captures all of that, the intent, high level questioning, how it's going to be, you know, rolled out, go to media, go to market, was really kind of critical in sharing the idea, answering a lot of questions before you actually got them, because it's all baked into an abstract,
yeah.
And then circulating that and working with different units, executive team, and some of the other departments that we were going to rely on to get buy-in and also to get on the same page. So when it came yeah. to actual delivery, whether it's design and brand, whether it's a social media team, paid media, et cetera, everyone's on the same page about how they can use it. And then they started thinking, you know, further about how they can use it, which only gave kind of more excitement and more value to the project. So that was really critical, cool. Getting that buy-in, answering a lot of questions when something is new, yeah. and then also just getting that participation from a lot of your other colleagues, which is really important to give this thing life and yeah. long legs.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a smart way to do it and just get... Yeah, not just buy-in, but like, you know, a chance to figure out what concerns they have up front and, you know, answer them, or make sure you account for, sure, let's make sure we have tracking in place for that aspect of it, or, you know, whatever it might be, just to kind of really know what everybody's thinking up front. That's smart.
Yeah, it's careful. You have to be careful, because if you invite too much, you know, input,
yeah.
you have a chance of getting derailed.
Yeah.
And so if you have a very clear, you know, use case for it and direction, it keeps the guardrails up, so that the extra input was invaluable. We got some great ideas. There were questions that were asked certain ways in the past. There were data points that we felt were really strong. And looking forward with our, you know, product development cycle and kind of where we're going as a company, you can see, okay, how this may relate to our storytelling moving forward. So all that was just really critical. But at the same time, you do want to maintain kind of ownership and direction, or else, because it can't be everything to everyone.
Yeah.
You have a lot of uses and a lot of purpose, a lot of value, but you still need to kind of maintain the focus and the direction of a survey or a data report like this. So that was really important.
Yep. Yep. That's great advice. So how did you go about getting survey responses? I mean, was it kind of multiple avenues? Did you just do email? Like, what was that like?
Yeah, this is an internal question, because we've used some market survey companies on a regular basis, just with assessing the brand and how what the market perception is of our offering, our platform, and of our brand overall. But this had a different type of purpose. And so we wanted to do a couple things. One is that our customer segment had shifted a little bit into where we were getting the profile, the firmographic of our customers had shifted a bit. So we wanted to consider that. We definitely wanted to hear from our customers, but again, going back to the primary use of this, for this to be mediable and kind of to cross the bar of like sample size and objectivity, you couldn't just survey or have too much of the survey representing your own customers. That just reinforces it, and it's you lose less of that objectivity and that vetting. That's what the media is going to be looking for. And so we partnered. We had a survey partner that we selected that could help us with their own panel, or to go out beyond their panel with the firmographic, you know, guardrails that we gave them, to make sure that we had enough sample size. In our case, we initially were hoping for 750 to 1,000. We thought we could get a few hundred of our own and then have the survey company fill in the rest. And that's what we ended up doing. We ended up with just under 1,200. And I want to say about, you know, 20% were Bluevine respondents from our customers. And then the rest were from the survey company getting from an objective panel. And one of the other kind of bonuses for that is that we had an opt-in question, because we knew we were providing value to the marketplace. Anybody who wanted to kind of take the ride, take the survey, would likely have an interest in what their peers are doing. And so we had an opt-in as part of the survey to say, well, you spent the time, you delivered us all this great information. If you'd like an early copy of the report, let us know and we'll email you. And that enabled us to create, you know, ongoing touch points with, you know, a larger set of audiences that fit our demographic. So it was a win-win. We were providing value to them, and we were able to create a dialogue for them to opt into, which is, and start, you know, kind of ongoing conversations and possibly conversions.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I think that's smart. And that's one of the reasons I was excited to chat on this topic with you, and just your PR background is just some of that context on, you know, media looking for the objectivity of it and whatnot. So I assumed you probably went outside of just your own customer base, but I think it's smart. You have a nice mix of that. So that's cool. And I think probably a likely path for a lot of people too. It's just not everyone's going to have enough to, even if they wanted to just keep it in their own customer base, like may not even be able to get enough to have the statistical significance and whatnot. So
yeah, if you're a brand with a significant, you know, force of gravity, you are, you know, well-known household name, it's a little bit different. But when you're still kind of, you know, on that path and of growth and, you know, growing your brand awareness and brand trust, then making sure, again, you have a really objective sample size and that you're hitting the number as far as a floor for how much, you know, say media in this case, which is, again, back to our primary purpose, would look for. You want to consider all those things and balance, you know, making sure that you didn't index too high in a particular vertical, you didn't index too high on a particular, you know, region in the United States. Ours was US focused. So we want to make sure that there was balance, you know, all across, or else you start to get picked apart when someone just looks at the methodology.
Yep. What about the, I know another way to do a data report is just kind of pulling an anonymous view of your own first party data.
Yeah.
So a lot of SaaS companies will do usage of their platform or different things like that. Where did you integrate any first party data or proprietary data into it, or was it just purely based on the survey responses?
Great question. And you're kind of hitting towards the broader database storytelling. So we started with the survey and the survey alone, being kind of like early in the year, really wanted to capture market sentiment. A lot of it was, in this case, catalyzed by the market. In the previous year within banking, you had SVB and the bank run, the bank contagion, as they called it, right? That in the wake of those issues, that really disrupted the first half of the year when it came to, you know, the industry and then the interest rate environment. How the year progressed over 23, what the kind of expectations or thoughts were going into the end of the year and the forecast going into 24. So there was a lot of like interesting points about decision making for a business that we thought was just super compelling. So we wanted to really lean into that and get sentiment from the market, and again, share best practices as well. So we intentionally went survey only, but the longer tail to this definitely includes proprietary data. For a couple of reasons. One is, again, you have a lot of control. You can shape that narrative. You can still make it objective, obviously, but you have some great insight into the way that is used. And that obviously can be used across the company. In fact, most of the time, there's other departments of the company who are pulling that data. Sometimes it's just not available to marketing because you haven't asked. And so as long as you ask the right way and that you're going to kind of compile it and merchandise it in the right way, you mentioned it perfectly. We talk about anonymous aggregated data. So you're not sharing any PII or anything like that. That you're looking at trends and how customers are using your platform. So that was phase two. So we're actually working on that now, working with BizOps in order to be able to pull that, thinking a little bit about, well, what data can we bring that gives us our own swim lane, but also kind of pairing it with the market sentiment. So we have this market sentiment report that we are committing to. We stood up, we're gonna have some frequency on. How do we pair it with a proprietary data report that augments that? So we have a bit of sentiment and best practices, and then you have, here's what's actually going on. Here's what people intend to do. Here's what customers actually are doing. Yes. How do they compare? Are they aligned? Do we see some, some delta in particular data point? And then what does that mean for the market today? What influenced it? And then what does that mean as a signal for what's going to happen next? So those are things that we're digging into now. We're really excited about it.
And I, we did a prior episode on the podcast talking a bit about, our approach to research reports and, and some of that stuff. And I mentioned briefly, but we did quite a few data reports at, when I was at Sprout Social, and, kind of had that combination of the, first party, like our, aggregated anonymous data, and then, customer survey responses, and then third party. And like you mentioned, there was some times interesting where in the survey response, they'd say, this is most important to us, or this is our, number one activity. And then you'd look at the data and see, for that same cohort that that's not actually the way it's playing out. And you can find some interesting deltas there as well to kind of dig into and whatnot. So, but that's cool. So phase two, you're starting to do more with the, BizOps pulling more of the data and doing all that.
And really important. I mean, from a PR standpoint, again, thinking about the media, again, having been doing this for over two decades, there are cycles and shifts and preferences when it comes to the media, whether it's the sample size or the topics themselves. And in this case, actually, working with a PR agency partner, who we have on retainer. In the first quarter, we saw kind of a shift away from these market surveys or sentiment data, and that they were shifting and starting to favor more proprietary data. So it wasn't that they wouldn't cover them, but there was a higher bar in order to get kind of interest. And so they weren't really covering them as standalones, but they would include data points in bigger pieces. So there was less opportunity for a big solo feature unveiling and more for using the report as a conversation starter, as a resource, as a relationship builder with a lot of our target media, whether it's, a trade reporter or a business editor or a producer, and how they might incorporate some of this into bigger features. And that became actually a bigger part of the go-to-media campaign with that early feedback that we had. And at this point last year, the agency is doing this all across fintech, our industry, and didn't get that type of feedback. And me personally, having done this again for a number of years and in this space with other companies, also didn't see that reception in the last several months or several quarters. So it was a bit of an adjustment we had to make. But it was was part of our plan, but we just had to kind of bring kind of like phase two of our go-to-media plan up a little bit and think about how do we integrate these data points to kind of enrich some of the storytelling that was either going on or that was shaping up to appear in the near future.
Yep. Yeah, that's really, really smart to use that, you know, initial pitch to get some of that feedback and kind of know how to make sure you're planning accordingly for the next one and be able to get more coverage out of that.
Yeah, you have to be versatile because, you know, if you're going just with one use case, even for the press, that you just want a big, you know, big reveal with someone that's embargoed or maybe have an exclusive with, and if you're relying just on that and things shift, you know, just in the industry, like it did in this case, well, then you're left holding the bag, and that's not going to feel good. Obviously, it's going to affect performance overall. So, knowing that you have a lot of these layers and a lot of these phases of implementation and usage allows you to be very versatile when you do have challenges or unforeseen issues that may pop up. We also had competition where we had Goldman Sachs and Salesforce announcing similar surveys around the same time. So that created, you know, a lot of challenges, much bigger brands, bigger sample sizes, different approach. Some of the questions overlap, which actually gave us some additional validity that we were finding the same things they were.
Cool.
But we asked a lot of different questions too. So we were able to kind of we were able to frame it against those other reports to say, okay, well, here's what these reports are saying. Here's what they looked at. Let's go a little bit further, or let's go in this direction, and we can give you, you know, kind of deeper data points or different data points to tell a different story.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. So clearly PR is one of the ways, like how, in addition to PR, like how did you distribute and promote the report once it was live?
Yeah. So couple ways. Mentioned the opt-in. So we have our lifecycle team, and so we wanted to get the report in its best form out to the customers who are interested in receiving the report, who opted in, and to non-customers, survey respondents who were running their own companies and interested in this report. So working with our lifecycle team to format the key takeaways, we had a summary page for our report itself, but we wanted to kind of really think about what the customers and the prospects were going to be most interested in.
Yeah,
and focus some of the copy and the headline to something that they would open and they would click through. So kind of thinking a little bit more granular about what the response would be from these two audiences, and social media too. We have our social media team who are building out calendars 2 or 3 months in advance, and saying, okay, well, this is something we don't have to drop this whole report on social media. Things are consumed differently on that, in that channel, right? And then on those different platforms. So, we came up with a drip marketing campaign. So we had, the questions when they started and worked with the social media team about, does this line up with anything else that we're doing? There are certain days and weeks of the year that are seasonal or thematic that they're planning content around. We have go to market for a lot of our product introductions. What's already in the schedule, and then how can we use some of these data points to either take up space, in between as a piece of content that's engaging and inviting, and how can it also marry some of the other data points or storytelling that's going on to add another element to it with a piece of data. So that was between our social media team and our design team, kind of extracting different data points, even data cuts. We headed into March, we released it in February, and we headed into March with International Women's Day and Women's Month, and wanted to do a data cut on women business owners. And so we were able to kind of go back into the data, extract that information with a women business owner kind of filter, and then tell some stories around that too. We had a whole series, Financial Literacy Month, and showcasing some of the women business owners in kind of the Bluevine customer realm, and we were able to augment some of that with these data points, which is really helpful.
Yeah, that's great. I love that example and just seeing all the ways you're practically doing that. Because I think to me that tends to be one of the biggest advantages of doing the data report. Is not like, here, now we have the report, but it's all the different, you know, charts pulling those out, and they're just good zero click content on social. And there's all kinds of ways you, like you said, go back into the data, pull some great data points, tie that to something else you're doing, like, you know, adding it into existing blog posts and upcoming blog posts. Like, just really reference it, use it, and cut it up in a lot of different ways, to me is the most powerful part of doing that project in many ways.
Yeah, there were some surprises, you know, in the data when it came to areas that we don't really play in, like marketing, for instance, and the way that where small businesses were investing, or where they invested in 23 and where they plan to invest in 24. And, you know, one of the things that came up was local marketing was really on the rise. It was in like the top four or five of where small businesses plan to spend. And so, you know, we took that to our content team and said, all right, well, if this is a big priority for small businesses this year, let's do some best practices on how they can leverage certain, you know, local marketing and advertising for their advantage. And so that, again, was a kicking off of a series of content, to your point, on the own side for a blog that was going to take some of this data, talk about the relevance of it and how the peer group was using it, and then, you know, kind of go down the path into best practices on, you know, whether it's, you know, out of home or whether it's digital, social, et cetera, how it's might be used.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. So you mentioned before, the PR, like the folks you were reaching out to and kind of getting that feedback on, just surveys alone maybe weren't resonating as well. So that seems like a good learning, that you got from kind of the distribution portion of it. Anything else, good or bad, like things that maybe didn't work well that you thought would, that were kind of just some of the new learnings when you were starting to distribute it?
I thought we were surprised. You know, one of the things that we looked at a number of survey companies, and one of the starting points that they would recommend some of the survey companies were, you know, write the press release first and then build the survey to kind of support it or feed it. And so we had an internal debate about that. What we really wanted was some new findings. And so we took a gamble, we took a bit of a risk, and we created a pretty, you know, broad survey that was genuinely crafted to identify insights maybe that we weren't thinking of. And so had we kind of gone with the approach of write the press release and back it in, you know, you always run the risk of having, you know, your hypothesis kind of lead the objectivity of a survey.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sitting here as a marketer, you know, there's value in that, of course, where you can, there's predictability, it aligns with your storytelling, but it may be limited, and you know, the audiences may see it a little bit differently. In this case, again, thinking about a media audience is one of our primary you know, areas of focus. And so we went in with some interesting questions we just knew business owners would be hopefully interested in asking and then learning from.
Yeah.
So there are points in the data that we were, you know, surprised as far as, you know, what was the single best thing they did, or what did they value in a, you know, credit card, or how are they looking at, you know, line of credit and business loans versus using a credit card for capital in 24. And so when you pull all those things together, you can find these pieces of information that may have been surprising, may not have been part of your hypothesis in the beginning, but are very germane to the actual, you know, intent and theme.
Yeah.
And in the end, you know, we're just looking to create value, and we felt like that approach would provide, you know, even greater value for the audience for the survey and the audience that we're trying to appeal to. So I think that was, again, a bit of a risk. It was a calculated risk. We feel like it worked in our favor, but there were a lot of learnings too, where we got questions afterwards that were going, you know, second, third layer deep, and we didn't ask those. And so as we look at our mid-year, which we had fully intended to do when we started at the beginning of the year,
yeah,
we have more input from the go-to media and the go-to market around this report that informed us about where we're going to spend our time going deeper on certain questions, because there's an appetite for it out there. We're seeing it, a need for it in storytelling, and we're seeing a demand for it from a media standpoint. So,
yep.
You know, those two things together give us, you know, a lot of confidence that we're headed in the right direction with our second report, and that'll inform other tweaks to our new year report from 2025.
Yep. Cool. Those are great. And then the last thing, just because I think it's maybe a bit more of a practical thing just for anyone listening that's considering doing this or preparing for it. What about like the format? Was it PDF only? If so, did you gate it or was it ungated? Did you do PDF and a web, like interactive web page, or like just talk a little bit about like the end product result and the format?
No single answer and no single process to get to what's best for you. Because this was a first attempt, this was a brand new thing for us as far as the way this was framed and what the purpose was. We wanted to make sure it wasn't gated. We wanted to reduce all friction. We wanted it to be really readily available as a helpful tool to small businesses. When we had discussions internally, we saw the value of gating it. You know, traditionally we haven't gated as much content. We started doing, you know, more of that with some, you know, best practices roundups in certain areas of small business. We got really good feedback on. And so we did see value in gating it as a lead capture. But ultimately, you know, as we talked through it, we thought it would just be greater value and to get more recognition of it out there to reduce a lot of those barriers. So there's definitely, it's, you know, these types of data reports are excellent for lead capture, as you know, and even using some of it in paid and performance marketing. But we decided not to. And then when it comes to format, we really were leaning into an interactive format. We felt that would be strongest. Again, this was new. So not only did we want to see who came to the page or how much traffic and then how many click-throughs or downloads you may get, we really wanted to find out which data points were most interesting. And so with an interactive report that was kind of hide and reveal, or that were, you know, slide oriented, where you had to kind of click through and spend time on certain slides, we could do a lot more measurement with an interactive platform that could say, okay, here's where the engagement, here's where the attention really was.
Yeah.
And we can measure that and say, all right, here's what's most interesting about this report. We thought it may be X, Y, and Z, and it's A, B, and C. So that led us towards interactive. At the end of the day, you know, the jury's still out. I mean, over time, we have to see, we're thinking about maybe going, because we had a lot of requests for a static report. That would be a lot of requests for the press, even for a PDF.
Yeah.
So that they could take it and sit with it and pull out what they needed, rather than have to kind of go through slide by slide, click by click. And so we're in the discussion now about where we head moving forward. So again, learning on the fly, there's a lot of value in the amount of data that you can measure from like a performance standpoint.
Yeah.
But then you also think about usability and the expense of it. So if we're going to do, you know, ongoing, and we're going to invest in a platform, are we going to license the platform, you know, through our provider? You know, we have a library of PDFs, and then ultimately we have to create a PDF anyway. So these things all kind of lead into what your format may be. If you already had a format, you had a design team that was, you know, already capable of designing on that platform for that interactive format, you're much further along than some others. If you have limited internal resources, the whole thing might need to be shopped out. Not that they couldn't, but you didn't have the time, or there's other things, you know, in the pipeline. Then you may, you know, look to a static report and some of the ability. I don't think there's a wrong answer. I think, as we talked about, there's just different types of data. And we may actually, you know, switch from interactive to static ourselves as we move forward and think about the use cases of the report.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And I liked your thoughts around gating, and just, you know, you can always gate future versions, but, you know, initially just get it out there and make people familiar with the concept and build trust and show that it's, you know, well done and all that stuff before you start gating it and doing anything there.
Yeah, and there's also different ways that you can do the gating. So, you know, you can release something that takes a deeper data cut. If we took a geographic data cut or a vertical focused data cut, we had a sample size that was still statistically significant, well, then you can extract those things and still be, you know, you wouldn't be able to kind of pull out what retailers are doing, what construction companies are doing, what health and medical are doing, so that they could see not just peer group as in peer size, but peer group as in someone my size and in my industry, and how valuable that could be. So that's something that we're thinking about too, as we grow the report and grow the sample size, is doing more data cuts. And we may have some of those that are gated. We still want to kind of reduce as much friction as possible, but those are just ways that you're thinking about a data report, what it could be, how it can be used. And if lead capture is important, you can get the best of both worlds by thinking about different ways you can do a data cut that would be significant and could be a standalone as a subset of the bigger report that's going out. Still have, you know, really interesting learnings that would draw people in and have them register to download it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, you know, before we wrap up, I think the thing that stands out to me through this conversation that I want to highlight is even just your talk around the format. Like, you know, we talk a lot on this podcast about like less friction, like do what's accessible to you. Even if you have to just put it out, like all is available to you is the blog post on your CMS, like put it, find a way to make it work in the blog post template instead of it getting delayed 3 months because you can't get budget for a developer. Or, you know, like you said, if you have a designer, do the PDF. If you don't, like, don't try to do that. And I think you, through all this, I feel like you exhibit a good balance of like, you didn't just jump in, you know, without any planning. There's still planning, there was buy-in, there was intentionality, but also you erred on the side of getting it done, getting it live, distributing, learning from that you're now then applying to move forward. And I, to me, that's just like one of the best signals of a, you know, strong content program, people just getting it out there and learning and iterating and going forward instead of, you know, spending so long on it that you said, well, now we got to wait and do it in Q1 or we got to do it in Q2 and just sort of like keeps getting kicked because you're waiting for more things or trying to finish it. And so I love a lot of that stuff that you've kind of shared throughout.
Yeah, just, you know, that's the thing. Get it out, see how it performs, learn a lot from it. You know, if you spend too much time perfecting it, it's just like building a product, you know, getting your MVP out, move fast, break things, fix things, get it right, and make sure you're hitting the right tones. Like you said, you could spend, you know, half the year or a whole year creating a data report and you may not get the performance you want. So, you know, do it, especially if it's something new for the organization, to show that you can move swiftly, you can get it done. You have, you know, some areas that you win that you can merchandise internally and say, hey, look, well, this was great. We had, you know, 500 opt-ins for the report. We didn't have those beforehand. For that alone, there's value, right?
Yeah.
But you need to justify the expense of doing it, but show that this isn't just a one-time thing either. You know, there's value in the frequency of it. We're investing in this as part of our storytelling, but there's a lot of uses in it. So get it together. Get it out, start measuring, start utilizing it. And again, as you invite, you know, it may start with one or two champions for this, but as you invite other people in and build that cohort, everyone's thinking about how they can use data, right? Especially if you're in any form of storytelling. So if it's just your marketing stack, if it's, you know, even in HR, sharing some of this information across all of our screens, in all of our offices, you know, there's lots of different ways that this type of data can be used, in board meetings, in all hands meetings, you know, et cetera. And it's found our way into writing our CEO as a column in Forbes. And, you know, we merchandise some of the data there again, informing a point of view on the market. So, you know, there's lots of ways to do it. If you invite more people in as supporters, they also become users of the data, which just gives the report even more value.
Yeah. Perfect. Awesome. Well, that's, I think, a great place to wrap it up. This puts a real point on it. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing kind of everything that you did, all the insights here, a lot of great stuff. And perhaps we'll be able to have you back on, you know, another time in the future and talk more about the, you know, business impact of these and follow on results and all that stuff. That'd be really cool.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you.